Man, great song, that really talks about, as Eric said, really captures kind of where our current generations are in terms of this idea of, I'm trying to figure out who I am, I'm kind of roaming through life, we're all going to die at some point, we're just trying to figure this thing out. So really excited you're here today as we're in week three of this series, Launching Rockets. My name's Kurt, by the way, if we haven't had the chance to meet, it's great to meet you this morning. And if it's your first time with us this morning, welcome. We're really excited you've joined us, and we're 3 weeks in, so if you missed week one and two, you can go back to crosspointweb.org to the podcast page if you want to catch up. Real quick catch up is, in week one, we talked about how when every baby is born into our homes, we have 1,000 weeks. Just like 1,000 marbles or so in this jar, actually 936 weeks to be exact, between when that child is born, between that time and when they go off to high school. And in that window, we have the opportunity to build into them everything they need to be successful adults. And so it really makes us measure our time. Last week, we looked at how there are four distinct phases that every child must go through in the parenting-child relationship, and every parent must lead their children through in order to eventually become lifelong friends, which I think is the goal of every single parent. And so you can go listen to that. Next week, really excited about next week. It's Mother's Day, and I've got somebody coming to do some sharing, then she and I are going to dialogue a bit. A lady by the name of Ann Smith. Anybody remember the name Ann Smith, by the way? Anybody? Whew, yeah. Ann is 92 years old, and she is the most talked about speaker we have ever had into Crosspoint. We had her across the street a number of years ago, and people for years would ask when she was coming back. It's like Tuesdays with Maury with her. I mean, she just has this wealth. In fact, when I called her this week and was catching up with her, she said, Curtis, she calls me Curtis. She says, Curtis, I can't wait to see you and tell you of all my new adventures. And I'm like, when I'm 92, I hope that's how I'm living, that every day is a new adventure. And so she's been a mentor to Julie and I over the years, and you will not want to miss next week. And I guarantee you, you will want to be here. And the cool thing is, while she's a woman, she's not a mother. She's married for over 50 years. Her and her husband never had kids. And she said to me, she said, Kurt, you don't have to be a biological parent to be a parent. And so she's going to talk about connecting the past and the future and the present and some of the through lines that we see across the generations, which just going to be really incredible stuff. Anyway, today, whether you're a Jesus person, not a Jesus person, I think we can all rally around this idea of helping the next generation win, which is really what this series is about. And so over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be looking at this. And whether you're a parent, employer, mentor, regardless of what stage of life you're in, if you have the eyes of the next generation, which most of us do, it's so important for us to understand our role in helping them win. And one of the barriers in this is we don't really understand the other generations. We're going to dig into this today, but I saw this fascinating clip from Ellen DeGeneres, her show that was flying around the YouTube, on just kind of, epitomizing how we really don't understand each other. So take a look at one of her recent shows.
Welcome to the show. I am Ellen, and like many of you, I am a baby boomer. We are the generation that grew up drinking from garden hoses and drinking orange Tang and drinking from our parents' liquor cabinet. Baby boomers were born between 1946 and 1964. They call us that because after the World War II, there was a boom of babies being born. People were like, we lived through the war, let's make whoopee. And for you millennials, making whoopee is like Netflix and chill. But they were married. That's the difference. So, millennials were born between 1982 and 2004. These are people who will never know the joy of using an end of a pencil to dial the phone. You remember that? You would actually... I have some news for baby boomers. We are not the majority anymore. A new census says that millennials have overtaken us, and I know this because a 20-year-old staff member read it to me from the internet. So I want to play a little game. I am going to test the knowledge between baby boomers and millennials and see how well they know each other. Tracy Woods and Chantel Miller, where are you two? All right, so I'm going to ask you questions about the other generation, and we'll see how well y'all know each other, okay?
Okay.
All right, we're going to start with the baby boomer. What does, and don't help anybody, because we want to see how much she knows. What does YOLO mean?
YOLO.
What do you think it means?
It's an icon on the text messaging.
No?
Yeah. No? No? Okay.
No.
All right.
You only live once.
Oh,
YOLO.
Okay.
YOLO.
Yeah. I knew that.
Yeah, I know you knew
yeah.
it. Yeah. You're just getting started.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, what is your name?
Chantal.
And you are Tracy.
Tracy.
All right, so Chantal, name all four Beatles.
Ooh. Actually, Paul McCartney.
Yep, that's one.
John Lennon?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, clearly I did.
Yeah, you did. Two others.
Oh my gosh.
Ooh. No clue?
No, Michael, no, not Michael Jackson.
But he did a song with Paul McCartney. He did Ebony and Ivory, remember that?
I do remember that.
All right.
Oh, I don't think so.
All right, so there was Ringo. And then there was George Harrison.
Okay, I'll have to go.
Wow. I'll go look them up. Yeah, they were a really good band.
They were.
Yeah, they wrote a lot of songs. They were really, really
good. Yeah, they were great.
All right, Tracy, on Tinder, what would you do if you really, 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 really like someone?
If I really, really, really like someone? I send them a great picture of my face. Sign it. Tinder. Let me see.
Do you know what Tinder is?
Not really.
It's a dating app. Okay.
Oh, okay.
What would she do if she really, really, really?
Super like, swipe
up. Yeah, you can only super like, but you can only do it once every 24 hours or something.
That's it? Okay.
You can't like too many people.
All right, so, you know, we really don't understand the generations, right? I mean, we think we understand the generation before us, the generation after us. And so we're going to dig today into some research by a guy by the name of Dr. Tim Elmore. And he's written a number of books, actually 32 books, probably more than I've ever read in my life he's written. And he's kind of the guru on this today. His organization is helping connect the next generation to God. And yet in very relevant ways, he's being used by Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, to help owners and agents understand the incoming talent. You know, he's being used all over the country in collegiate athletic offices to really shape the next generation. And so he's kind of the go-to guy. In fact, his book, if you want to pick it up, I'm going to be pulling some charts from this today to show you just some really fascinating things. Generation iWire, Last Chance to Save Their Future. And he really talks about how we can understand how to connect with kids, students, and young adults in today's digital world. And so before we do this, let me just pray for us before we dive in. Heavenly Father, thank you for this time, for every single person who's sitting in this dark room today, instead of being out in the beautiful day doing something else. We're here, God, not just going through religious hoops because, you know, it's important for us to be in this room, but we're here because we want to go somewhere. We're looking for something. We're going after something. We're going after you. And so I just pray that you would help us to see some things about these generations that you've created and our responsibility in helping move the needle on this. Just help us to see things maybe we've never seen before. Encourage us today, I pray in your name. Amen. So I want to kind of give a broad brushstroke, if you will, to start off of these generations, really five generations. Did you realize there are actually six living generations right now? I think there's been very few times in the history of the world we've had six generations alive, but because we're living longer, that's actually the case right now. And I think, you know, Elmore's book is a great snapshot of these, and this is a part of a bigger chart that I want to show you this morning, which kind of explains the ebb and the flow from one generation to the next. All right, so these are the five most recent generations that you see here as they've basically come of age, as they've began to influence the world. And so way back here on the left, we have the builder generation. And the builders are also referred to as the silent generation or the greatest generation in some cases. And they were born between the years of 1929 and 1945. Now, the next row down, you see the life paradigm. So Elmore kind of gives the life paradigm. Basically, when this generation went from backpack to briefcase, this is the kind of attitude they had as they entered the work world. And so the builders, the life paradigm that he gives them is be grateful you have a job. And the reason that's the life paradigm is because this generation grew up in a very, very difficult time in our history. The Great Depression was a part of their early life. World War II was a part of their life. This is my grandparents' generation. My grandparents, my grandfather fought in World War II. He got injured in World War II. He got paralyzed on one side. I only knew him as a half-paralyzed man. He couldn't operate on his left side, only with his right side. And so, you know, the first years of their lives with the Great Depression, World War II, they were frugal, they were conservative, they were thrifty. I mean, I remember my grandparents, like, saving the Christmas wrap. You know, they're like, oh, don't throw it away. They fold it up and put it away for next year, you know, because that's what you did. I think they were the impetus of the show Hoarders. They really were. That's where that show began, you know, saving everything because you never know when you might need it. And yet they were one of the greatest generations to build into what we know today as modern-day America. Now, the next generation, the pendulum swings from this conservative posture, you know, all the way to the other side with the next generation to a confidence posture with the baby boomers. The baby boomers come around, and the baby boomers were born between 1946 and 1964, as Ellen said. And you know, the baby boomers, you know, the reason, as she said, they're called the boomers is because 10 months after World War II, boom, you know, all of a sudden we had a baby boom in America. 76 million babies were born during this generation. You know, the maternity wards filled up after, you know, men and women came home from the war. And so this generation was huge. It was almost this large and in charge mentality. And so there was very much a sense of entitlement in this generation. And so if you think we have a healthy dose of entitlement today, guess what? It was also very healthy, you know, 50, 60 years ago. And so the life card that Elmer gives to this generation is you owe me. You owe me. You know, people who were born in this baby boomer generation, you know, they felt like we deserve a better world than our parents gave us. And so that was kind of their life card. Now, you move to the next generation. We have the baby busters. These are the kids of the boomers. And this was Generation X. These are people who were born between the years of 1965 to 1982. This is my generation. I'm right in the middle, 1973. And the life card to my generation is relate to me. All right, the pendulum swings back the other way. It's like, man, you guys screwed up the world, mom and dad. You know, we need to, I need you to be authentic and relate to us. And so those who grew up in my generation, we went through Roe v. Wade, Watergate, Vietnam was a part of our generation. It was just a harder, darker time than the boomers went through in the previous generation. And one of the reasons, this is fascinating, one of the reasons that busters stuck as a label, it's also known as Gen X, but busters also kind of stuck as a label or a tag to this generation, is because the first year of this generation's existence was the public introduction of the birth control pill. And so instead of there being a boom of babies, which happened also because of, you know, men and women coming home from the war, it was a bust. And so not only was there a shrinking, you know, generation because of the public introduction of the birth control pill, but we also had Roe v. Wade during this time. So there's actually a shrinking, you know, decreasing population. Now, you know, the general feel of busters was, you know, that we kind of grew up in the shadows of the boomers who kind of messed the world up. I mean, they outsourced all the manufacturing jobs, you know, kind of created the housing bubble to crash, you know, a few years later, led us into two wars that we never really got any resolution on, kind of destroyed the global economy during that season. And so, you know, the life card of the busters of Gen X is relate to me. We need a little more authenticity. We need to be a little more in tune with what's going on a global level. Now, we get to the next two generations, Gen Y, the millennials, and Gen Z, and this really is the focus of this series. This is this idea of launching rockets. Eric, he was referencing this first hour, and he said building rockets instead of launching. I'm like, actually, that's what we're doing right now. We're really building. Yeah, thank you. We're actually building the rockets because you want them to launch one day, right? You want them launching out of your home. And so the millennials, what's fascinating is the millennials born between the years of 1983 and the year 2000, the turn of the 21st century, their life paradigm, Elmore gives them, is life is a cafeteria. Life is a cafeteria. Now think of it this way. Think about going into a cafeteria, grabbing a tray, and then starting to go down the buffet, and you just kind of pick and choose what you want to eat based on your taste that day. All right, this is how millennials live. All right, life is a buffet for me to pick and choose. Sometimes what I pick and choose aren't congruent. They're almost oxymorons, but that's okay. I can coexist with that. All right, and so picking and choosing music, for example. I mean, boomers, busters, how did you get music when you were younger? Vinyl, right? 8-track, tape, you know, cassette tapes, CDs, albums. You know, millennials, they're like, why would you do that? I mean, you're buying like 5 songs you don't even like, you know? So all of a sudden iTunes and Spotify appear because you can now pick and choose a la carte. I can buy 1 song from this album, another song from this album, totally make my own playlist up. And so this is the world that they know. Now, this generation also makes their educational decisions this way. So we see, you know, students graduating from high school, and, you know, if they go to college, they don't just go to a college. They might go to three or four colleges all to get one degree. You know, and one of them might be studying abroad for a part of that time. And then certain institutions, like, it's like, hey, if you don't know what you want to major in, then, you know, you can make one up. I mean, you can, like, you know, tell us what you want and we'll approve it. And so it might be like business and clowning. I've got a clowning business, you know. And so now it may not fit anywhere in the global economy, but that's what your major is. And so, and this is what's really funny and kind of concerning about where we are. We're not necessarily steering students into things that the world needs. It's kind of like, follow your passions. Whatever your passion is, do that. And then, you know, we get out of college and we're like, I got bills, but I can't use my degree. And so, spiritually speaking, this is what we see as well. Across our country, we see this at Crosspoint. You got a little bit of Buddha, you know, a little bit of mysticism, a little bit of Jesus, a little bit of New Age, a little Oprah mixed in, you know, and it's like this hodgepodge of, I'm going to pull from all, it's like a cafeteria, and I pick and choose what works. Now, the latest generation, this is the generation born since the turn of the 21st century, is called Generation Z, or depending on what social scientists you follow, they're beginning to get the name the Homelanders. And the reason they're getting the name the Homelanders is their generation began about the time of the Department of Homeland Security. And so think about the last 15 or 16 years. This is all these kids have known. It's been a very, very dark time in our country. I mean, they saw the downfall of the dot-com era. You know, where, hey, if you have a hope and a dream, you can start a company online, and then, no, you can't anymore. You know, they saw a 9/11. And not just 9/11. Not only did 9/11 happen, but do you realize there have been 28,000-plus terror attacks since 9/11, 2001, across the globe? 28,000. So this is the world they grew up in, or growing up in. They've grown up with a poor economy, a recession. I mean, these kids are growing up seeing the fear, the tears in their parents' eyes, not knowing if they're going to be able to provide financially this year, next year. They're growing up in racial tensions that are unprecedented, you know, in our country, at least for the last 40 or 50 years. And so I think we can agree that the Homelanders, Generation Z, is growing up in a much darker era than the previous 20 years or so that the previous generation had. And so the life card of this current generation is, here's what Elmore says. He said, it's coping and hoping. I'm just kind of hacking my way through, hoping to make it. And that song that the band did, you know, Suit and Tie, I mean, it really captures that. I mean, I'm roaming, I don't know where I'm going, I'm trying to figure out who I am. And so, you know, it's easy to look at these, and if you're a builder, a boomer, or a buster, it's easy to look at these and be like, well, I mean, everybody knows the problem is the last two generations, right? I mean, if we can just fix them, which hasn't this always been the problem, right? Like, if you were a buster, your boomers were like, well, you guys are the problem. And we've continued to turn out fine, right? And so it's easy to look at millennials and homelanders as the problem. And what I want to shift us on, what I hope we can see today, is we've got to begin to say, okay, how are they the solution to the problems our world is facing? How can we equip them? How can we build in and coach them? And it's going to take that. It's going to take coaching and mentoring, because that's what we needed in order for them to have the tools they need to be successful adults that are changing the world and going beyond where we've gone. And so let's talk application a little bit. What can I do? Regardless of what generation we are, regardless of whether we have kids in our home or not, we have the eyes of the next generation in some way, shape, or form, every single one of us. And so what can I do? What can you do? Well, here's kind of the bummer of this. If you're an adult age 35 or older, and I'm in that category, we are responsible for what we're seeing today. All right, that's the bummer of the whole deal. You know, we've not always done a great job preparing the next generation for what's coming. See, we seem to think we can raise the next generation the way we were raised 30 years ago, and it's just going to work, and it's not, because the world is changing faster than it's ever changed in the history of the world. And so think about this. The kids today, the homelanders, they're the first generation that doesn't need you as an adult for information. Every previous generation needed teachers, needed parents. You were the holder of data. It's kind of like, hey, you need us because you need the information we have. But it's different today, right? They don't need us for that. We now, Google is a verb. Go Google it, right? Enter Google. They have information at their fingertips. But what they do need you for is interpretation. Right? Let me help you make sense of what you're seeing on Google. That YouTube video you watched, right? Let's talk about this and what this means for us. And probably most importantly, what this next generation needs from us is they need us to lead them better than we've currently been leading them. In our homes, in our churches, in our workplaces, in our schools, in our sports teams. They need interpretation to understand all that they're seeing and what that means going forward. This is one of the reasons we hit a broad swath of topics here at Crosspoint. Every now and then people are like, man, you guys talk about stuff I didn't know churches talked about. You talk about sex all the time. I love talking about sex, by the way. We used to do a sex series. Some of you are like, oh, great, here we go. You know, we used to do a sex series like every year and a half or 2 years because the culture's talking about it all the time. And it's time for one. I think it's been like 2.5 years. And there's always a baby boom after a sex series, always. Do you know why there's a baby boom, though? Not because we're talking about it, but because there's a healing that happens in marriages and relationships. There's a healing that happens. You know, I talked last weekend about how my son Matt and I, we went on a man weekend a couple, weekends ago, and we talked about stages of intimacy as I'm building into him on this front and just trying to set context and interpretation. We talked through the, stages of intimacy from holding hands, kissing, open mouth kissing, fondling, sexual foreplay, oral sex, intercourse. I mean, just what's appropriate in dating, what's appropriate only in marriage. And there were a few people walked out and they're like, man, that was awkward. And in the same breath said, but I can't tell you how important it is to hear that we need to talk about this with our kids. This is why we talk about this stuff. Because we are surrounded by this stuff and nobody's giving interpretation to it. Right? I mean, listen, I'll talk about it. I'll make jokes about it. Sometimes I cross the line and maybe, I'm trying to just make you laugh sometimes, I may go off on an innuendo that's inappropriate. My goal isn't to be inappropriate. And yet, we've got to talk. I've got to get the attention of the next culture because we've got to interpret what the world around us is saying about things like this. And we're willing to take the risks. To say, hey, we'll go out on a limb. And I mean, sometimes people say, well, other pastors aren't talking about this. I'm like, I know. That's why my vernacular is different than other pastors. If everybody liked other pastors, they'd be going to all the churches, right? All of us are needed in the community to change the culture of our community. And so we'll talk about these things. So here's the thing. We can't assume that, we can just help the next generation be just like we were growing up. We think they'll be fine if we just get them out the door and clothe them and feed them and educate them and they'll be fine, but we need much more intentionality. And so I want to show you another chart from Elmore's book, and this really kind of helps us understand where the current generation is and what's going on in their life and how they interpret some of the things that are going on. So you're going to see, I'm going to give you 5 words that make up, the acronym makes the word scene. It gives you the scene of the next generation. This is from Elmore's book. And then what these kids today may assume based on these realities that are present that we've created in the world today. All right, and so I think you're going to see this. All of us are going to go, oh yeah, this totally makes up our world today. All right, here we go. So the first one, their world is full of speed. All right, I mean, that's our world today. We don't call it Graham. What do we call it? Instagram, right? I mean, you don't have a pressure cooker anymore. What do you have? An Instapot. I mean, everything's instant. We have ATMs and, microwave ovens and Netflix and text message and Apple Pay and, Amazon same day delivery. I mean, everything's fast, 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 fast. And I love it. I mean, I love the convenience of having speed. But here's the thing we have to understand. If a kid today has only grown up in a world of speed, then we can consequently assume that they think that slow is bad, right? And there's certain things that you can only develop over time. I mean, so things like a career. I want to make an impact 2 weeks in. Well, sometimes it takes 10, right? Or I want to be the president by the time I'm 25. Well, maybe that's a 20-year climb. So this idea of slow is something that's not positive. And we can't blame them, right? Because who created this? Well, Gen Xers and boomers and busters. We created this culture, right? The letter C. Letter C stands for how the world is full of convenience, right? So we love the modern day conveniences. I love that I can stand in line at Starbucks and I can, pay my car payment and watch Netflix all at the same time. I'm waiting on a drink, right? And then I go, well, why am I even waiting? I could have ordered it and picked it up at the end of the counter. This is speed and convenience all in one picture right here. But see, think about it. If the world that you've only known for the kids that have been born in the last 15, 20 years, if this is all they've known, then we can assume that they think hard is bad, right? Because everything's just a simple click away. Here's something really fascinating. Statistics have said that the number one complaint educators K through 12 hear from students today in schools across the board, across the country, is it's too hard. It's too hard. I don't know how to do it. It's too hard. And they tell their teachers that. See, we don't like hard anymore, right? We have easy financing, TurboTax, never been easier and faster to get your taxes done. We grew up with Easy Bake Oven, right? As long as it's easy, I can do it. Recently, we had a cleanup day at our house, and I was kind of coaching my youngest daughter, who's 7, on, I gave her 3 things. Here's the 3 things I need you to do. And like 3 minutes later, she was already playing. I'm like, whoa, what are you doing? Are you done? She looked at me and said, no. I said, well, did you complete A, B, and C? No. Well, why not? It's too hard. I said, it's because it's work. That's what they call it. It takes work. You can't just sit there and voila, it happens. But see, she's been raised in a culture where I click and it happens. And so you know, this generation, anything that's hard, it's like, oh, it's not good. Next letter. Next letter, E, reminds us that the world is full of entertainment, right? I mean, if you have 5 minutes waiting, what are you doing? Checking scores, checking news. I'm pumping gas at the gas pump, seeing highlights from Jimmy Fallon on the gas, you know, pedestal from last night, right? I mean, we have constant entertainment in front of us. Take a look at what this CNN.com article reported last summer. It said, a new Nielsen Company audience report reveals that adults in the United States devoted about 10 hours and 39 minutes each day to consuming media during the first quarter of 2016. The report concluded that out of 168 hours in a week, we spend more than 50 with devices in our hands. I mean, think about this. So if you spend 40 hours working, approximately, some of you are 50 or 60 or some of you are 30, and then you say, I sleep on an average of 7 hours a night, that's 49, so that's 89 hours. Say personal care, you know, getting up, taking a shower, getting ready for the day, prepping food, eating lunch, breakfast, dinner, takes maybe 3 hours of your day. That's 21 hours a week, right? All of a sudden, you realize you've got like 58 hours left. And if 50 of those hours, if that's, you have 58 hours to do the most important things and 50 hours are with a device, we say, well, how am I accomplishing everything? See, teenagers, they've grown up. This is all they've known, all right? Kids, this is all they've known. And so if you've grown up in a culture where all you know is constant entertainment, then you can assume that boring is bad, right? I mean, how many of us have heard our kids go, I don't know what to do, I'm bored. You took my device away. Check out what one expert psychologist said about this. He said, the experience of being bored for a time may be exactly what the child needs to do. Children who experience a lack of programmed activity are given an opportunity to demonstrate creativity, problem solving, and to develop motivational skills that may help them later in life. We endlessly program them with activities, show them videos while driving, insist on being their playmates when other children aren't available, buying them amusements like video games, and we've overlooked the amazing opportunities for psychological growth right there in the quiet of our own home. In fact, they go on to talk about how, they're finding that empathy and creativity only happen when we have margin and downtime. And so if we're always at a fast pace, always entertained, and there's all kinds of clutter and noise coming at us, you know, life's screaming at us, we're trying to survive the week, you can't develop empathy when you're surviving. Because guess who you're worried about? You're worried about you. You're not worried about other people. And these are the kids who are going to be leading our companies in a few years, right? The letter N. Now, this one's an interesting one. Dr. Elmo Moore, he says, this doesn't apply to all kids in this generation today, but it does apply to any kids that have grown up in middle class or affluent America. So that's pretty much us. So he says, these kids have grown up in a world of nurture. A world of nurture. I'll never forget when my oldest daughter was 16 months old. We were headed to Disney, and we flew into the airport, got on a shuttle bus to take us to the resort, and we got her car seat in the van, strapped her in, you know, as good parents should be doing, and this grandfatherly figure got on the bus next to us by himself and started a conversation. Where are we going? Where are you going? He's like, oh, I'm going to see my grandkids at Disney, and he's like, man, you parents have changed a bit, and I'm like, we have changed, you know, and he's like, you got all these, like, car seats. I'm like, I get it. I remember riding on the little hump in the front seat, you know, on the floor as a kid, all the way to Florida 1 year. I remember laying in the back window of the Nova my parents had, you know, going to grandma's house. I mean, it's changed a bit, right? He said, yeah, man, I see, you know, I go to my grandkids' house for dinner, and all of a sudden, my 4-year-old grandson comes out in a helmet, he's got elbow pads on, he's got wrist guards, knee pads, and he's splashed up with sunscreen. He said, I say, where the hell are you going, to fight a war? He says, nope, I'm riding my scooter. I'm like, exactly. He's like, man, I fought in Vietnam with less war gear than that, you know? So, I mean, these kids today, they've grown up in an era of safety seats and, you know, safety helmets and safety devices and bubble wrap everything. And if that's the case, then it's easy for them to assume that risking is bad. This is an interesting one. See, what's interesting about this, check this out. In measurements today, We have the most risk-averse generation of college students today than has ever been measured in the history of the world. The millennial generation has been tagged as being very confident, you know, kind of like, hey, I'm going to be the president at age 25. You know, what do you mean I can't have an extra week of vacation even though I've worked for only 2 weeks? I mean, very confident, okay? These millennials are very courageous in what they're doing. I mean, they're willing to say what they're thinking, which is a great attribute. They're high entrepreneurial in their skills. I mean, they want to start their own things, you know, have their own businesses. It's great. But what psychologists are finding more and more is that they have high arrogance and low self-esteem. And this is fascinating because you think of those two as being like mutually exclusive of one another. But think about it. They live in a social media world where they have all these social media platforms, you know, all these thumbs up and likes and, you know, and shares and, oh, they liked what I posted, and so everybody's affirming what I'm doing. And yet deep down inside, they wonder if they've really got what it takes to be successful. And so this is where mentors come in. This is where men and women who have been down the road say, hey, man, I've been there. I've been afraid before. Listen, I've wondered if I had the skill set. You've got it. You can do this. And this is why volunteering is so big around here at Crosspoint. It's why we love the number of volunteers we have involved all around the board, but especially in kids. We love the number of men we have involved around here because we have men building into boys. We have women building into girls, you know, saying, hey, you can do this. I mean, you've got inside of you what it takes. When you're serving, you're really mentoring is what you're doing. And the last letter, letter E, and again, this one, Elmore says, isn't necessarily present in every kid, but if it is, he says, we have nobody to blame but ourselves. Letter E stands for how the world is full of entitlement. This idea of I deserve this just because I'm here. Hey, I'm arrived. I deserve everything, right? I mean, these kids are growing up in an entitlement culture, and if they always feel like everything, they should have everything, then they're going to easily assume that anything I have to work for is bad. Labor is bad. Right? Because they've always got a trophy. I mean, always got a participation trophy, right? I mean, we give ribbons and trophies and a dollar for putting a fork in the dishwasher, right? We're like, woo, man, you did it. I'm like, no, that's like part of being in our team and our family, right? It's just part of contributing. And if this is happening, guess what it comes back to? It comes back to us as parents. I coached eighth grade rec basketball, 8U rec basketball this past winter. And at the end of the season, we had to give out participation trophies. I hate it. I don't agree, but we do it anyway. And so I had to do this. And I'll never forget this little 8-year-old girl who just poured her heart out. I mean, she's a great little ball player. And I remember her walking up and me giving her trophy and congratulating her. And she marched across. She handed that thing to her mom and dad and said, this means nothing to me. Thought, man, she knows what this thing doesn't mean anything. I think as parents, they think we're stupid. They think that we think a trophy's great. She's like, I didn't do anything. It doesn't mean anything. We didn't win. And so, you know, this is what we've got to, you know, wrestle with. And so what's fascinating is when you look at these assumptions up here, you know, these words slow, hard, boring, risk, and labor. I mean, aren't these the things that grow us into like great, contributing, positive adults? I mean, when we like wrestle through these things, I mean, aren't these some of the things that when we have this in our lives and we have to, you know, be creative or figure out what to do or work hard, aren't these the things that make us great spouses and leaders and employees and students? And listen, I love the world we live in. I wouldn't change it. I love the modern technology and conveniences, but we've got to be more intentional to equip these students and this generation for what it means to be successful. In fact, intentional is like the word of the year for me. It's one of my favorite words. John Maxwell, I love this little phrase from Maxwell. He says, nobody finishes well by accident. We've got to be intentional to equip this next generation. And if this stuff's kind of connecting, I know some of you have been taking screenshots. This is all from Dr. Elmore's book. You can go to his blog. His blog is actually growingleaders.com/blog. How many of you actually even know who that is up there? Yeah, that is his name is Slash. In case you didn't know that, you're a millennial, you don't know that. Guns N' Roses, great, great moment right there. Yeah, he blogs 2 or 3 times a week, and you'll get in the stream of just some of the latest stuff that he's seeing. So I want you to take out your connection cards. There's some next steps on the back we're going to walk through, but here's the thing, here's the importance. I want to make a connect on this, to a global connect, scripture connect. Why is it so important we help the next generation win? In 1 Chronicles, which really is a book in the Old Testament about chronicling, it's chronicling the ebb and flow of the nation of Israel, kind of keeping a history on how they're walking their life out. One particular tribe is teased out right here. All right, one tribe is lifted out and teased out among all the other tribes. And look at what it says in chapter 12. It says, of the sons of Issachar, this tribe known as Issachar, were men who understood the times. And he didn't stop right there. He says they understood the times with the knowledge of what Israel should do. And this has been my prayer for us as we headed into this weekend. My prayer has been that we would understand, have a better understanding of the times that we're in and the shifts that need to happen in order for us to set up the next generation for success. Because we believe they are to do greater things than we're to do. In fact, Jesus said this. Jesus, right before he left the earth to go up to heaven, he said to his disciples, his followers, he said, I tell you the truth, anyone who believes in me will do the same works I have done. And get this, he says, even greater things will you do. Because that's the goal of every generation, is to propel the next to do greater things. And why do we hope and pray for this? Because we need to. Because we need this. The next generation needs this. It's for you. It's for me. It's for the kids that we're building into. It's for those you're mentoring and coaching. I mean, when we do this, do you realize your life is so much better spent? I mean, you're going to be more happier. You're going to be more joy-filled. When you can take and leverage your experiences and your, you know, stumblings and the things that, the mistakes you've made over the history of your life, and you can help someone who's behind you be more successful down the road. And if you're a follower of Jesus, listen, this isn't like, hey, go have fun and see if you can shape somebody. This is like a mandate. He says, I want you to go and make disciples, which is basically building rockets and sending rockets into trajectories, serving others, loving God. So we're gonna sing a song as you work through your next steps. You know, maybe it's just coming back next week. You know, this has landed here for the first time, and we'd love to have you come back for Mother's Day. Maybe God's been impressing something on your heart while you've been here today, and God just said, hey, here's something you need to make a shift on. Just write it down or text yourself. I mean, this is more for you than us. Maybe it's serving. Maybe you don't serve. And, you know, serving really is building into people. It's mentoring, coaching, especially in kids. Maybe you just need to jump in and get involved in that. There's a serve survey. I want us to stand and mark your next step. And we're going to sing a song. And then we're going to have some baby child dedications. And this song really is a prayer, if you will. It's a prayer that mentions a couple prayers that we kind of recite sometimes. And it's about us saying, God, we want help from you in discerning what we need to do to understand the times and what to do in these times. God, would you help us? So let's sing this together, and then we're going to dedicate some children.